Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Don't sweat the technique. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN. Can the Texans survive with a poor running game? Can they win with a poor running game? Can they be an AFC championship contender with a running game that's meh? ESPN 97.5, proud partner for Houston Restaurant Weeks in 2024. It's time to raise some money for the Houston Food Bank. For you, it's simple. Dine out, do good. Choose from over 400 restaurants to visit for lunch or dinner. Select from their prefix menus, and a portion of the proceeds goes to the Houston Food Bank. Plus, you're supporting local restaurants. Started on August 1st. It runs through September 2nd, so get out there to these restaurants now. You're running out of time. Go to HoustonRestaurantWeeks.com to find all of the participating location. 713-780-3776. Can the Texans be just fine? Good. With a meh running attack, with a poor running attack. 23rd last year. Haven't been good in the preseason yet. Seen some flashes from some guys. Akers, the British Bulldog, Jawar Jordan. Jordan was better through the air than he was running the ball. Damian Pierce, not good. Taylor looked good.
Yeah, he looked pretty good.
I put him on my 53-man roster because I'm biased. I have a J.J. Taylor bias.
I mean, obviously, you know, as a friend of the show, we're pulling for him. But when I've seen him on the football field, there's not much to not like about the fact that he can be serviceable.
No, yeah. He's the one thing I think going against him is that he's a little older. He's a little older.
Size.
That's going against him, too. But, I mean, if you're producing, it doesn't matter how small you are.
True. I mean, look, Singletary's a small guy, and he was effective. But, yeah, I mean, how old is he?
If they're all like 26, 27, whereas the other guys are rookies. Yeah. So if it's a tie, let's say they move on from Damian Pierce, which is still, it's not a lock that they move on from Pierce. But if they do, it opens up another spot. You would have Mixon, Cam Akers, Dare, and then a fourth spot. And if it's tied between Jawar Jordan, a six-rounder, the British Bulldog Brooks, who you sign as an undrafted free agent, a rookie, or a 26-year-old J.J. Taylor, if it's a tie, they're not going to go with a 26-year-old.
Right. You're either going to look good because you got a steal in the sixth round, or you're going to say, hey, maybe the six-rounder doesn't make it, but we got another undrafted kid that's the same thing. It's going to work out.
Yeah. Now, I'm, of course, rooting for J.J. Taylor, friend of the show. 7-4-2-8, Matt Schaub was who he was because of a great offensive line and a good running back. Okay, was that a running back making the quarterback, though? Because I don't think Stroud needs to be made. You know what I'm saying? Like, Stroud, to me, is going to be a good enough quarterback where he's not going to, you know, need a great running game and a great offensive line to succeed. Again, not calling Stroud Mahomes. But Mahomes can still be good despite not having a good running game. Stroud last year had one of the greatest rookie seasons a quarterback has ever had, and the Texans were 23rd in offense. So where Schaub needed that good running game to be a top five caliber quarterback, I don't believe Stroud does.
No, that's the key. I mean, as good as Schaub was, he needed his other elements, both running and passing the football, to be as good as he can be. We've already seen that CJ is a tier above a Matt Schaub, and that he looks like he's the kind of guy that's going to take the position to a new level in terms of the history of this franchise. That's what you're talking about. That's why you can do without running the football as much or having it being as effective, because now you give him more weapons than you had a year ago. He did what he did as a rookie with less than what he's got this year at all the different skill positions. There's no reason not to believe that he can be even more successful, whether they can run the football or not.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Tracy, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Tracy?
Hey, guys. How y'all doing, man? Hope it's been a good day. I woke up today. It's been blessedness. But talking about these Houston Texans, I think they with a decent running game. But the biggest thing is we need a healthy offensive line. I don't know if it was like week 10. But even then, we were still lost the games that we could have won, Atlanta being one, Carolina being something like that, and we didn't have all of our guys. if we end up having all of our guys a healthy offensive line that can end up making the push and being better than just a Band-Aid than what we had at the beginning of the year last year, I think we're going to be more than okay, especially with the weapons that we have. Appreciate y'all. Y'all have a good day.
Appreciate the call, Tracy. I'm with you. Like, a good running game, of course, makes the offense better. My point is, I still think they could be a really good team despite having a poor-ish or below-average running attack. They were last year. And if you look at the last 10 Super Bowl champions, 7 of those 10 were outside of the top 10 in rushing attack. It is not imperative. It is not a necessity for a good offense or a winning team to have the running attack that most people want the Texans to have.
We've talked about the Chiefs. We've talked about teams in the past. If you have the right offensive minds, and you have the right people in the coaching positions, you can overcome your shortcomings. Whether it be, we talked about in the past too, sometimes teams don't have great defenses, and they have great offenses, or vice versa. Those teams are successful too. On a different level, if you've got the right offensive coordinator and he knows that he has weapons in the passing game, he can make up for a less than running game. Yeah, you'll still run the football. Yeah, you're still going to take your chances to run the football because you need to create some balance and have the defense at least respect it. But overall, if those guys know how to get their weapons in the right positions, you're still going to be successful offensively.
Yeah. Space City Kev, if Arian Foster was on this team, they would be Super Bowl favorites, no doubt. Yeah, maybe so. Arian Foster at his
prime?
At his peak with this offense would be pretty incredible. But I mean, there's really no sense of thinking about that. It's just going to make me disappointed, Space City Kev.
And he could catch the football, too. Look, I think Arian Foster put into any situation like that with, you know, talent in the passing game, it's going to make any team better. So, I mean, yeah, from a Texans perspective, would he make you better no matter what Joe Mixon brings to the table? Sure, probably.
Yeah, I think he's just living like in an alternate reality. Like, oh, what could be if, you know, Arian Foster was right now? He'd be perfect for this, which you're right, it would. Give me a reasonable progression from CJ with a top 20 running game and a top 5 passing game, and I feel that's a recipe for a deep playoff run. I do too. Like, I think that's where you want to be. Top 5 passing game, top 20 running game, maybe a top 7 offense, everything clicks defensively. You're primed. Like, you're in position.
Yeah, and I think of all of those things, I think the running game has the biggest chance to either improve or be less than. I mean, I think there's the biggest amount of variables that are in play with the running game. It could run the gamut more, but I think the passing game is going to be solid, whether it's top 5 or not. I think it's going to be really, really good, and that you don't have to worry about that. Yeah, I think that there's the most amount of fluctuation is going to come out of the running game.
Texter saying, how did the Texans run the ball in the playoffs last year? They had 76 yards against the Browns and then against the Ravens. It couldn't have been good.
Couldn't, and then they were behind, right?
38.
Oh boy.
38 yards against the Ravens. But you got by with it in the first game because you threw the ball over the yard and you were really good throwing the ball. Like, the point of offense is to score points, right?
Yeah.
Does it matter how you're doing it?
No. I mean, look, I mean, a lot of times, too, teams got offensive points because their defense was so damn good because their offense had a lot of weaknesses. You just have to make sure that you maximize what you do well and minimize how much you get exposed for what you don't. If you can't run the football, you still run it minimally, but when you do run it, hopefully you gain some yardage and do some things.
1-6-4-2, passing attack will make the running game better. No team will be able to stack the box against us. That's a good point.
It is true.
And you add the element of having a third receiver this year that you didn't have last year to the, you know, caliber of Diggs. So if they stay healthy, I would agree with that. And even last year, you had a big chunk of the year where you only had one good receiver. Ocho, Canary and Foster made people miss like Singletary did. Foster was very good, but I don't remember him as a shake-and-bake running back. No, he's more one-cut, kind of beat you. Maybe didn't have the shiftiness. Now, comparing him to Singletary, I think is disrespectful. Arian Foster is pretty dang good. I wouldn't say that Foster was like shaky, though. Like, I wouldn't say that he was all that shifty. He was more hit his cut, explosive through the hole, maybe run over a guy or two. Not bad shake and bake, but not elite shake and bake, but just incredibly productive.
I think the biggest thing is, unlike what we were talking about with Pierce, he could get into the hole, but he could still pause before he made that first cut.
Yeah.
And that way be effective. Whereas, yeah, he's not going to head and shoulder fake you and try to leave someone holding their undergarments in his wake. But he was a really, really good at picking the hole and hitting it at the right time.
See, he wasn't like a freak athletically, though, because if he was, he would have been drafted. Like, his best attribute was his vision, and that's probably why he went undrafted. He was a little bit banged up at Tennessee. His vision was his best skill, which is hard to pick up, you know, film, combine, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, the Texans found a gem with him. 0315, Foster was good because of Kubiak. I think they were a perfect marriage. Kubiak's offensive running scheme helped running backs, but he was like the perfect marriage for that.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I think that's the thing that I was talking about earlier, too. You can be good, but you can be better with the right coaching staff and the right scheme. So even if you have less than in terms of what you think on your roster from, let's say, from the running back position, if you are put in the right situations to where when you do run that, you know, you either are moving the line, doing some things so that you can maximize the skill set of your running back, then that's how you can take it to another level.
0979, a good running game eats up the clock and keeps the defense off the field. See, that's like an old school thought, and I don't think it's outdated. I don't think it's antiquated because it is true. But why couldn't a short intermediate passing game also do the same thing?
That's right.
Like if you're able to convert on third and three by throwing the football and you're throwing it, you know, 65, 70% of the time, but you're picking up 4, 5, 7 yards here and there and you have a 12-play drive, you can also eat up the clock. Like there's more than one way to cook that egg. Yes, like the easier way is like a good running game, but if you have that same sort of efficiency with the passing game, you can also eat up clock.
Yeah, if you're running wheel routes and slants and you're staying in the middle of the field and you're keeping the clock running, yeah, same stuff, different way, and there's nothing lost.
Yeah, 713-780-ESPN, 3667. If the Ravens were the stopper last year, the Texans pick up the pieces to get past them. I mean, a team like the Ravens, they're going to have to win a shootout. Like, they're going to have to throw it. Well, I mean, their defense is better. They're going to have to throw it 40 times. And yeah, because I don't think you're beating that Ravens run defense. You're just going to have to beat them through the air. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Keith, you're in the Hive with the Bees. What's up, Keith?
Hey, guys. Running back question while on the topic of running backs. Would you rather keep Damian Pierce and Cam Akers on this roster or swap them out entirely for Dalvin Cook and Jerick McKinnon?
Yeah, I'll take Pierce and Akers.
Will you?
Yeah.
If price doesn't matter?
He said both of them, Pierce and Akers, Cook, yeah. McKinnon. You can get Cook and McKinnon right now for free. I mean, for veterans minimum, not for free, of course. They're right. Free. They're free agents.
I think free and signing them for the veterans minimum, I think they might give you more production than Pierce and Akers.
Of those four guys, I think Akers is clearly the best.
You just don't know how long you're going to have them, too.
You don't know if Cook and McKinnon are going to be productive. Boy, like they were awful last year.
McKinnon was really limited in when they used him. But
that's who he is. Like he's a scat back.
Yeah, I'm not expecting him to go between the tackles all the time. But I think Dalvin Cook, well, he was supposed to be. So, yeah, of the two, it's not a great choice. But I think I would actually lean to Cook and McKinnon.
Yeah, I would go Pierce Akers and cut Pierce. But I think Akers of those four is the best, and I think he's the best for the scheme too. So give me Pierce Akers. If I had to pick Pierce and Akers or Cook and McKinnon, yeah, I'll go Pierce Akers because of Akers. All four are not ideal. 8341, every team wants a good running game. The question wasn't do we want a good running game. The question was can we win without a good running game, and the answer is yes. All you have to do is look at history and look at last year and the pudding on the cake. There you go. Thank you, 8341. I'm surprised to hear you guys praise Shaw when he was the overwhelming weakest link on several stacked Texans teams on both sides of the ball. He had a couple of good years.
A couple of good years.
Now, was that because of who was around him? I think it's a fair point. Honey Glaze Branham, what are the chances Davis Mills turns into a Matt Schaub for another franchise?
Slim, but it's possible.
Yeah, I would go pretty low.
Yeah.
I would go pretty stinking low. All right, 713-780-3776. There are signs. We know that Jose Altuve wants 3,000 hits, right? We all agree that Jose Altuve really wants to chase 3,000. Can we agree to that?
Yeah. Yep.
There are signs showing that Jose Altuve is already trying to chase after 3,000. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. So I think we're starting to see signs of Jose Altuve chasing after 3,000 hits. And look, it's important that we have to kind of walk on eggshells when we bring up a Jose Altuve. Mm-hmm. We have to be very, very delicate of how we bring this stuff up. And look, I think Jose Altuve is still fantastic. Jose Altuve is still a plus-plus player for you. No problems with him in the leadoff spot. He's been great. He's been very good. He's been above 300 this year. There are just some clues, because we know that Jose Altuve really wants to get to 3,000. He's flat-out said it. He said it would be a huge accomplishment, wants to do it. He signed that five-year extension, although he's probably going to take him longer than that five-year extension to get it. Altuve currently sits at 2,197 hits. He's 803 hits away from 3,000 in his career. And he's had a ton this year. He leads the league in singles. But here are some clues, and tell me if I'm losing my mind, 713-780-3776. Here are the clues we are seeing where Jose Altuve has 3,000 on his mind. One, he is chasing everything. He is swinging at everything that is thrown at him. And he's always been a free swinger, like we know that. But he's went from the 28th percentile last year to 6th this year. A significant jump to how much that he is chasing and swinging. Why is he doing that? Because you can't get base hits if you're not swinging at pitches. The walk rate is down 10.7% last year. It was 10.9% the year before. This year, it's down to 6-7. It's down 4%. So he's walking less. Why would he walk less? Because you can't get hits if you're walking. Also, the power's down. OPS 915 last year, 922 years ago. This year, it's 792, which is still good and still fine. But it is down. It is down. So is he trading power for contact in an effort to get more hits? I think those three things point to Jose Altuve seeing 3,000 hits in his career.
Well, there's no doubt he wants it. I think that the other thing that factors into all this is, does he know how bad a lot of the guys in his lineup is to where he's doing a lot of those things, not just to get hits to chase 3,000, but because he knows he's got to do it because he doesn't trust a lot of the guys in the lineup that can? I don't know. I don't look at him the same way as I look at Verlander, who's basically been outwardly, aggressively, as we've talked about, chasing the strikeouts in the 300. But I think that any baseball player that loves the game and values history and wants to be a part of that, they're gonna be mindful of achievements like this. I just don't see him as a guy that plays the game on a night-by-night basis with that kind of mindset.
I don't know why it would be different than Verlander. Like, I mean, Verlander, you're saying that he's chasing strikeouts and chasing wins. Isn't that the objective of a pitcher?
Well, I think Justin Verlander in his heyday was chasing strikeouts. I think Justin Verlander is a different pitcher now, so I don't think he's chasing strikeouts the same way he would rely on strikeouts earlier in his career. But I also think that, you know, it's from everything, when you look at the two guys, I think the more selfish-minded guy of the two...
I don't think it's a selfish thing. I'm not saying it's a selfish thing. I think that, well, it's more... Because, like, early in his career, he was a guy who had high average, never walked... swung at everything, and it led to power. Like, it led to his power being gone. He had no power early in his career because he wasn't swinging at great pitches. And then, like, as he progressed as a professional hitter, like 3, 4, 5 years into his career, he became a hitter that stopped swinging at everything, tried to be a little bit more selective so he got better pitches to hit and did more damage with those pitches that he got in the zone, which led to more power, but it also led to his average slipping. I think he's going through the metamorphosis of, like, reversing back to who he was as a young player, where he's willing to trade away some of the power. Not that it's all gone. He's still a better power hitter now than he was as, like, a rookie or a second year in the league. But now he's surrendering some power for more contact in an effort to get more hits.
Yeah, but what I'm saying when I was talking about the more selfish of the two is Altuve's given team-friendly deals and he's taken less. He's staying with the Astros, win or lose or draw. This is what Verlander is chasing wins by going to the best team that also is going to give him the most money, that's done things in his career as well. Whereas they're just kind of different in their makeup and mindset. But they're all chasing their place in history, yeah. And they want to reach those milestones. I just think from Altuve's perspective, it could be factored in the lineup and the lack thereof of a lineup that he's had in the past that maybe has changed some things. I also think that he's never going to change completely about being a free swinger.
Well, he's been a way bigger free swinger this year than the last 2 years. Like it's gotten worse. Like it's in the like the proof's in the pudding. It's there. I don't know if the contract situation has anything to do with.
Well, I was talking about in terms of the selfishness. I was just pointing.
But I mean. He's agreed to team-friendly deals. Verlander has not, I guess, is the point. But I don't know if how that's like chasing numbers.
No, I don't know. If I think that Verlander has never made it a secret that those are things that are extremely, extremely important to him that he wants to get to. And if it means, you know, as he goes later into his career, where he plays and the situation that he's in is going to matter more. Whereas I think Altuve is going to be, we know he's going to be an Astro no matter what.
I just don't know how that translates to numbers.
Well, because
I don't know how it translates because this
if the Astros window, if this golden era starts to come down a little bit, you know, and he doesn't have quite the lineup around him, I mean, it's going to be different pitches to hit, and it's going to be in a different situation when if he's truly chasing and getting close to 3,000, he won't have the same kind of support, maybe see the same kind of pitches, but he's not going to go chase another team to try and be in a better situation, to try and be in a better lineup.
Yeah, I just don't know how that pertains to this conversation. 333A, keep the goat's name out of your mouth. Jeez, he's hitting 300. What else do you want? I'm not criticizing Altuve. I'm just saying that there are some clues here that he is 3,000 in sight. He is looking at it more. Walking less, swinging more, power is going down a bit. Not that he's a bad offensive player. I still think I love Jose Altuve. He's my favorite player. Ocho, there's absolutely no selectivity in Altuve's batting approach. The dude makes Vladimir Guerrero look like Tony Gwynn. It's actually gotten worse this year, pretty substantially. 8217, it's embarrassing watching him chase ridiculous pitches. There are some embarrassing swings from Jose Altuve. Now, he is elite contact, but there are times when he looks pretty stinking mad.
Well, that's the thing. Sometimes he hits a ball that's an inch off the ground that ends up being a base hit, and sometimes he doesn't hit that ball, and he looks pretty stupid doing it.
It's who Jose Altuve is, and it's our Jose Altuve. It's our free swinger. But yeah, it looks like 3,000's in sight. I feel like Jose is just trying to produce on a team that had wavering offense all year, but wouldn't that mean that he's trying to hit for more power? Like, if you're trying to be more of a run producer, wouldn't you want to hit more home runs and have more power? Wouldn't you want to get on base more often for the guys that are behind you, like a Yordan Alvarez, who currently is batting second directly behind him, or batting third, who would be, you know, on deck after he drew a walk? So, like, he still has one of the better offensive players in all of baseball behind him. Bregman's been solid. And then, you know, Kyle Tucker's been hurt since June 3rd. But Kyle Tucker was on a tear at the start of the year.
Yeah, look, I think whether he's trying to hit a home run or not, I think a lot of times he realizes if he has his runners in scoring position, all he needs to do is get the single. But a lot of times, especially lately, some of the pitches he's swinging at when you need him to have a single in those situations have not been good.
Yeah. Dre, the end of game at bat on Friday night was absolutely brutal. The ball was in the other batter's box. It was in the other's batter's box. I think it skipped on the way to the catcher. Chalupa, there's embarrassing swings from every player. That is true, especially against nasty pitchers. 5798, is there any player in baseball who bunts for hits more often than Altuve? Probably. I mean, I don't watch other teams as closely as I watch the Astros, so I couldn't, you know, answer that for you. But I'm sure that there is. I'm sure that there's really fast guys who don't hit a whole lot that maybe bat in the bottom of the order that try to bunt a lot. 713-780-3776. 7218, would I like Jose to get to 3,000? Yes. However, he doesn't need it to be a surefire Hall of Famer. 2,500, 2,600 hits puts him in the Morgan and Alomar range. My guess is around 2,600 is where he will end it. Yeah, I want him to get to 3,000 hits, but I'd rather the Astros win games than Altuve get hits. Now, I do think they're mutually exclusive. Like, I think they work hand in hand. The more hits Altuve gets, the better chances the Astros have to win. But just a couple things I've noticed. Walking less, swinging more, power is down. I think he's trading a little bit of power for contact. Not that it makes him a bad player. Don't put those words in my mouth.
No, he's still a very good offensive player. I like the fact that regardless of what his power numbers have been in the past, too, if he sees the kind of mini shift that teams are putting on him in the third baseman's back, he's been, you know, more apt to lay the bunt down this year and take the base they're giving him. And I love that because he can set the table, like you said, for Bregman and Yordan when they're behind him.
You can't get base hits if you're walking and not swinging the bat. And he is not walking, and he is swinging the bat more than he has since he was a young player in Major League Baseball. 713-780-ESPN. This offense is goes through waves, ebbs and flows. A couple of weeks ago, it was awful. Starting to trend a little bit better. Could certainly use some improvement. I mean, Dana Brown picked up Ben Gamble today because he probably thinks he's an upgrade to Trey Cabbage and what he has on this bench. Are there other ways for the Astros to help this offense? 713-780-3776. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. We're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Gotta be very delicate whenever you say something about everybody's favorite player, the greatest Astro of all time, because they'll come at you when you start to say that. I'm not saying anything bad about Jose Altuve. Just a few observations I've had where I think he's chasing some hits. 3863 trying to get more hits is bad? Question mark. Well, you can look at Jose Altuve's career. Jose Altuve, 3-4 years into his career, tried to actually get less hits. He tried to get less hits, see better pitches in the zone, walk a little bit more, which led to more power in his game. So there are times whenever, you know, you try to be a little bit more selective, you don't wave and flail at pitches way out of the zone, that maybe it leads to more power. So sometimes less hits are actually good. Yonner Diaz is kind of doing it right now. Yonner Diaz, it's like, okay, you know, his power is down a little bit. How do you get that power back up? Well, stop swinging at pitches out of the zone, which guys like Yonner and Altuve do it because they can actually hit the ball. They can hit a breaking ball that's 3 inches off the outside corner. They can hit the ball that's 3 feet off the outside corner, but you can't do damage with that. So if you look at Altuve's numbers over the course of his career, Altuve's batting average started to dip, but his power started to increase. Why? Because he was trying to lay off worse pitches that he couldn't do damage with. He was swinging at pitches he could do damage with, which led to more home runs. Now we're starting to see that reverse a little bit, where his zone is expanding, his chase is expanding, his walks are going down, he's trading the power away for more base hits. So they're not bad, but not all hits are created the same.
No, but at the same time, think about what Jeremy Pena has gone through in his transformation, too, where for a while there, everybody said, well, where'd the power numbers go? And he was swinging for the fences, but he became a worse hitter overall, and he kind of aborted the power game for a while to try and just make sure that he could cover the outside corner, not swinging as many bad pitches, try to do some things with it, and now you're seeing the best of both worlds, where he's kind of settled back in, where he has occasional pop. But he's got a better eye at the plate. He's swinging at better pitches overall, and he's swinging for base hits first.
Yeah, his power, Pena's power, is still not as good as it was his rookie year. But you're right, the other stuff. His average is way up. His on-base is way up, which I'm good with. Like, I'm good. Like, if Pena hits 15 home runs instead of 22 like his rookie year, but he's hitting 20 points better and his on-base percentage is 30 points better, I'll take that trade-off. So I'm not saying it's a bad. It's just an observation where he's trading a little bit of power for more knocks. He's swinging more. And he's walking less. Just an observation.
Yeah, you got a lot of big boppers in this lineup to where not everybody has to have consistent long ball power all the time. If Pena and Altuve are setting the table and you've got your full complement of Yiner and Yordan and Tucker and Bregman, you're in a good spot.
Someone saying, what is his walk rate? Last year it was 10.7%. The year before that, it was 10.9%. This year, it's down to 6.7. Like, that's almost cut in half.
Mm-hmm.
It is almost cut in half. So it's, like, pretty substantial, like, how much the walk rate has went down, how the chase rate has went up. Just noticing that. Just noticing that. All right, 713-780-3776. How, if any, can this Astros offense get better? Is there any way to improve this Astros offense August 20th post-trade deadline?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different ways. We talked about a former all-star catcher in Diaz with Colorado that's still out there, that cleared waivers. That's a guy that if you seriously think that Yiner's going to be playing a lot of time at first base and you need another catcher on this roster, whether it's just to back up Caratini or because of the fact that you want Caratini's bat in the lineup, doesn't have to catch all the time, want another guy that can do that and is a pretty decent catcher, you can go that route. You saw the Braves lose Austin Riley. Gio Urshela cleared waivers. Is he phenomenal? No. But is he a good guy to kind of fill in until you're getting a guy back from injury? Hint, hint. Yeah, he's good. And so you're waiting on a Tucker. You know how bad these outfielders are going. you know, I put this on there, and then they actually went and got a Gamble today to where at least they're trying to find an outside solution that may be better than what they have. And that's all I'm asking for, because it's ironic. You mentioned the guy that if it comes out of your mouth and it's a negative or it's a perceived negative at all in Jose Altuve, everybody's going to jump all over you. Well, the other guy that is such a polarizing figure that's out there that's getting a lot of run on social media is Yuli Gurriel, because he's hitting 300 in AAA, because he's got some numbers, and because immediately people are like, that's the guy. And they have to remember, it's different with Yuli because he hasn't played in the bigs all year, and that he's older, and you don't know if he's got anything left, and we've been down this road before, whereas some of the other guys that are going to be let go and DFA'd by teams are still good enough to where they can help you this year.
Yeah, you're not going to get much help at this point of the year. Like, you're really desperate if you're trying to make changes at this point. And, like, Ben Gamble, is he an upgrade over Trey Cabbage? Time will tell. Would Yuli Gurriel be better in 2024 than Zach DiZenzo? Yeah, it's in play. It's possible. Now, I think that one thing we never talk about whenever the Yuli Gurriel conversation comes up, and I mean this by, like, everybody that brings up Yuli Gurriel, we don't know what his minor league contract is. Like, does he have an opt-out of his deal? Why do we just automatically assume that the Astros could get Yuli Gurriel? Well, they could trade for him. Well, why would the Braves trade him?
I thought, like, they said they did. I thought they let him go.
No, Yuli Gurriel has not been DFA'd. That YouTuber was wrong.
Okay.
That commenter was wrong. In fact, they're moving him to third base to see if he can be an option at third base in the big league level. Because they're desperate. Riley broke his hand. Ursula has been bad all year long. Yuli Gurriel is a first baseman that's trying to play. He was formerly a third baseman. Hasn't played there in forever. And now at this age of his life, they're trying to play him at third base because they're desperate for answers at third base. So I don't, like, how attainable is Yuli Gurriel? Like, I don't think he has an opt-out. If he did have an opt-out, why isn't he opted out yet? Why would the Braves trade him to the Astros whenever he might be their emergency third baseman? So I don't know if Yuli Gurriel is as attainable as everybody makes it seem. Like, I see it on Twitter, like, oh, Yuli Gurriel is hitting this. Why don't they go? They act like Yuli Gurriel is a free agent. They act like they can just be like, hey, Braves, give us Yuli Gurriel back. He's ours. Like, he belongs to another team.
Yeah, my biggest thing has been, I've been adamant about always kicking the tires on the guys that are out there if they can even have a chance of making you better than you already are. That's why I still would say kick the tires on Neris and see if there's a chance to bring him back in if you think he's better than someone in your pen. I think that when you're looking for, when there's an extra catcher out there, when you know that your two catchers are desperately needed in the lineup pretty much on a nightly basis right now, you kick the tires and you check them out. And those are guys that have played Major League Baseball this year. One, you don't know what it's going to take to get Yuli. Two, you don't know if he can play hit Major League pitching still yet again. And then you're going to have the whole thing about where you're going to play him, and then you're going to have the whole city's going to be clamoring. Anytime anything goes wrong, got to play Yuli. No, you don't.
Yeah, it's almost like backup quarterback thing, where, you know, the first, like, Singleton's 0-for-1 with a strike. Oh, Yuli should be there. Yeah. So, like, there is danger in that, like, being a bit of a distraction. Now, like, should they kick the tires on it? I'm not opposed to that. I'm not opposed to kicking the tires, but it annoys me seeing fans say, well, go get Yuli, like he's literally a free agent. He's literally not.
One, he's not, and two, you don't set the bar too high to think you're going to get prime Yuli.
Yeah.
He's a couple years past when you last had him, and you forget that the regular season was abysmal, and he salvaged some things at the end of the year in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But overall, you don't know what you're getting, and he's more disconnected from Major League Baseball than the other guys that are out there that you could, like, Urshela was a guy that I would have kicked the tires on if I knew Bregman was going to be more long-term.
Yeah, if it was long-term.
Yeah, but since it's not, then I'm not going to worry about
that. Even then, I think I'd rather play Whitcomb. Yeah. Urshela's been so bad. I mean, if you
play that ball last night?
If you could get, yeah, it was one error.
Yeah.
If you could get Yuli for a bucket of curveballs, then you ask yourself the question, is he better on this roster than Zach DiZenzo? I don't know. It might be worth trying, but again, I don't know what it's going to take to acquire him.
That's the biggest thing, because if you're having that conversation at all and you're thinking about it, then you might as well see what he's got left in the tank. Like, this is a move that Correa made a couple years ago. This is also the Aledmys Diaz move that they made. Mm-hmm. Like, if you've had success here in the past, would they consider it? Would players be probably pulling for it, like Correa was pulling for Marwin a couple years ago? Sure. But then don't get your heart broken if the minute you try it, it doesn't work and they cut bait quickly, because
yeah,
they're in the middle of a playoff race.
Even Marwin and Ledmus are a bit different, though, because they can play every single infield position. So it's more like a depth piece, whereas Yuli's probably only a first baseman.
I was going to say, he could back in the day, but would he do it now, and would he be decent at it? Probably not.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be comfortable playing Yuli anywhere other than first base. I mean, the Braves are throwing a Hail Mary out there with Yuli at third. I think that the answer, I think you answered it. Like, how do you make this offense better? For me, it's Caratini plays more. Like, to me, that's how this offense gets slightly better. Because I'd rather have Caratini in the lineup over Chaz, some days over Dubon. Like, give me Caratini against a righty, give me Dubon against a lefty. But I'd rather see Caratini over Cabbage. I'd rather see him over Chaz. I just told you how I felt about the Dubon thing. You can platoon them. I'd rather see him probably over Whitcomb right now, although Whitcomb's kind of exciting. Would you rather see Caratini or Singleton? Like, that's another question you can ask yourself. Because, like, I think Caratini's pretty, like, solid offensively. I'd rather see Caratini.
Yeah.
So, like, to me, Caratini playing more is how you get the most out of this offense.
See, and the thing is, though, the reason why, because we mentioned it early on, like, Elias Diaz, if he's out there and you want to play Caratini more and you know that you got to have Yiner's bat in the lineup, is he better than Caesar Salad? Yes. Is he a better guy that maybe has at least enough of a bat that you feel good if you needed him in a pinch hitting situation too, but at least he can play catcher as well and give you the backup option of being a good major league catcher? If the answer is yes, then he's cleared waivers, I'm talking.
Yeah, I'm torn on that one. I'm not sure how much better he is than Salazar. The rapport between catcher and pitcher is pretty important. So, like, putting him, like, here you go, 35 games left in the year, that's kind of dangerous. He's not doing anything offensively, so for me, he'd be a backup catcher at best. I don't hate it. Like, if you wanted to do it, sure, fine. It's a way to get them both in. But maybe they just call Salazar up on September 1st.
Maybe.
And then now you do have that third catcher. And it also hasn't prevented Espada from playing both of them.
Right.
Like, Espada, just because he doesn't have a third catcher doesn't mean he's scared to play both of them. They were both in the lineup yesterday. Mm-hmm.
And he actually made the switch late in the game to where he moved Yiner from first base to catcher.
Which I think we overrate that. People are like, oh, you can't use two catchers in the lineup. What happens if both of them get hurt? When was the last major league game you've seen where two catchers got hurt on the same team?
Right.
It's extremely rare. It might happen once every 5 years. So do you need to burn a roster spot on a third catcher because of that? I think it's overrated. And Espada has shown that he's willing to use both of them even without the third catcher, which I applaud him for. All right, 713-780-3776. What are your car wrecks of the day? 713-780-3776. What are you nominating? Car wreck of the day. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. And I got what it takes to rock the mic right here.
It's the final week for Rock the Mic. We're crowning our champion this Friday at Carbach Brewery.
The winner is...
Come join Gallant, George, and the Killer Bees as they broadcast live from noon to 7 for this special event. Besides watching the finalists duke it out to be our Rock the Mic champion, if you come out Friday to Carbach Brewery, you will get early bird access to our VIP tickets for the ESPN 97.5-92.5 2024 Listener Party. So see you Friday at Carbach Brewery.
Got what it takes to rock the mic right.
You all right?
My leg is broken. The bone's coming through.
Let me see. You prick. Where's my money?
This is the car wreck of the day.
Car wreck of the day, 713-780-3776. What's your car wreck of the day? 713-780-3776. Before that, though, Renel Blanco. We still don't have a theme song for Renel Blanco. Mm-hmm. It's disrespectful to Renel Blanco, who's been very, very good this year. Good in his last start. See how he does today against a good lineup. What's Blanco do tonight?
I'm going to go, he gives you 6 1/3, gives up 2.
6 1/3, gives up 2. I'll take that with this offense.
I was close last night. I got Kikuchi through 5.
It didn't look good after 2, after 1.
I know.
Yeah, that's really good against this Red Sox offense. So I'll take that. Yeah, give me that for Renel Blanco. I'll say he does not do that. I'll take the over, sadly.
On the run.
But I hope he does it.
How much, what do you think he gets up?
You said how many innings?
6 1/3 and gives up 2.
I'll go 5 1/3, gives up 3 or 4.
Ooh,
yeah, I mean, he doesn't go deep into games. He's got a really good ERA. He's got a really good opponent batting average, WHIP, all that. He's got some long at bats. He throws a lot of pitches in an inning. Everything is a battle. He goes deep into like every single hitter. So, like, him going 6 innings would be a win every time. I think this late in the year.
I'm going to take it. I think he's going
to
do it.
I hope so. I hope you're right. I hope you're right. Let's get to the car wreck of the day. What are you nominating for the car wreck of the day?
Easily the first nomination has to be the Astros defense last night. It was not good. It was something that most teams can't survive. And the fact that we had to witness it for a night, at least we witnessed it with a win.
Yeah. Worst defensive performance they've had in quite some time. They're a good defensive team for the most part. That was rare. Hopefully it was an anomaly. Hopefully we don't see it again this year. But yeah, that four errors in a single baseball game, that's high school.
Yeah, it is. And the thing is that between Omar Lopez and Joe Espada, they take a lot of pride in it. And he mentioned it after the game to where you know they were embarrassed by that. And that's not their brand of baseball.
They're also, the four errors were, I think, pretty easy plays. Like the Whitcomb play, like that was a little bit of range.
The play seemed to be a no-brainer.
Yeah, I think he got screwed up because the runner was running out of the runner's lane. Which, drill him in the back. Drill him in the back. I am in favor of hitting dudes, period. But if the guy is running inside the runner's lane on the infield grass, drill him in the back. I think Caratini was trying to throw it around the runner instead of just drilling him in the back. But Caratini, that was an easy throw. Just drill the runner in the back. The Altuve play, you could easily say that was Jeter's fault for leaving. Yep. That's an easy play. Pena had it in the glove and just dropped it. Easy play. Whitcomb was probably the toughest of the four, but even that play is an easy play for Bregman. So all four of the errors were easy, routine plays.
Yeah, the Descenso play to me was one that, yeah, it's not like he's diving and having to get up and make a Bregman-type play. It was just a slide-to-your-left type play, and he booted it.
You mean Whitcomb?
Whitcomb, yes.
Yeah, they're easily confused there. I'm going to nominate ESPN. There was two walk-offs in baseball yesterday. Francisco Alvarez for the Mets and Yiner Diaz for the Astros. You know who got more run?
I can guess.
You're right.
The New York team.
New York Mets, who were in third place over the Astros. So car wreck of the day, ESPN, for giving Mets priority over the Astros. Mets are not relevant. Astros have been relevant since 2017. Maybe even 15. 8835 nominates Delaware State, missing their flight before an 11-hour flight to Hawaii. This game is Saturday in Hawaii. I saw this, too. I thought it was because of a charter bus issue that they missed their flight. Yeah, but they missed their flight to Hawaii, and they have a football game Saturday against Hawaii.
Ooh.
Now, it's only Tuesday. I'm sure they wanted to get there so they could
get the jet lag out. Yeah.
But you're also Delaware State.
And you're probably first class.
You're Delaware. You know why they were really getting there early was to take in the scenes and the sights of Hawaii.
Probably. It's a once-in-a-lifetime for all those guys.
Yeah. Jet lag. You're Delaware State. You're just trying to get there early to hang out in Hawaii.
And you're getting a whole lot of money to play.
Probably a bye game. I have no idea how good Delaware State is, but I don't think they're anything. Ocho says car wreck of the day is Espada once again pulling Kikuchi unnecessarily. Let the man pitch. I agree with that one. We disagreed on the hook of Espada there. Kikuchi at 99 pitches, time to get him out. But you just can't face Yoshida. He's been like their best hitter for about 2 months.
But if I'm bringing Taylor Scott in, I feel pretty good about it as opposed to if you brought in Caleb Ferguson or someone like King.
What gives you a better chance? Kikuchi versus Connor Wong, go Cougs. Or everyday Tay versus the hottest hitter in their lineup?
Did you say you looked at the numbers of what Wong had against Kikuchi?
No, I just
previously?
No, I don't. I just know Kikuchi was owning him in the game yesterday.
Yeah, I thought Espada made reference to that in the post game.
He might have.
Yeah, the fact that Wong had good numbers against Kikuchi when he was with Toronto. But regardless, I understand what you're saying. I just feel like Taylor Scott's good against anybody. I would bet on him. Kikuchi was at 99
hitter.
Pitches. Like him at 100 pitches getting me his best stuff.
You got to get the hitter out.
I know.
Yoshida's a better hitter right now than Wong.
Oh, there's no doubt.
But, like, keep that guy out of the lineup. I thought I agree with Ocho on that one. 713-780-3776. 5798, two nominations for car wreck. Danny Jansen, catcher for the Red Sox, literally throwing the game away into right field last night.
Yeah, after they got Yordan at the plate and looked like they could get out of that inning, he basically did them a solid.
Yeah, that was poor play. Caratini was off the bag. It was just like the first baseman, I guess, wasn't there. Errant throw. He probably had him. Like, a good throw probably gets him. And he also nominates Brian Flores in his hot Tua beef.
It's still going. Flores tried to address it today, I guess.
Yeah, Flores took the high road.
He did.
He said he's happy for Tua. He's wishes him well. He's happy with all the success he's had. He hopes he does well for the rest of his career. Probably smart for Flores to handle
it that
well.
He wants another job. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a smart way to handle it. Remember when he was up for the Texans job, though?
Oh, yeah.
I'm happy.
I think everybody should be.
I mean, for two reasons. D'Amico. Like, I'm happy they hired D'Amico. That's the main thing. Keep the main thing the main thing. That's the main thing. But, yeah, I never understood the Flores interest.
I don't. More experience, I guess.
Yeah, I never really understood that. I was happy that didn't happen.
I think the Astros defense wins.
Yeah, I'll give it to the Astros defense. They won the game, though.
Which is the silver lining.
Yeah, so congratulations, Astros defense. They're just winning. Either winning even when they're bad. It's going to do it for us. Thanks to B-Rod, Boston Rodriguez, filling in for Brian. He's blank. I'm Branham. We'll talk to you tomorrow, Houston. Good night.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.